few of us here today, this is a solemn and most momentous occasion. And yet in the history of our nation, it is a commonplace occurrence. The orderly transfer of authority as called for in the Constitution routinely takes place as it has for almost two centuries. And few of us stop to think how unique we really are. In the eyes of many in the world, this every four-year ceremony we accept as normal is nothing less than a miracle. Ronald Reagan, in his first inaugural address. Hey, y'all, and welcome back to another episode of Court is in Session. I'm excited to be back on the mic and just by myself. I enjoy having guests on, and I'm definitely going to do that more. We have some coming down the pipe that I won't share with you yet, but I am very excited to have them on. But every once in a while, I like to get on the mic alone, as was the beginning of my podcast, and just kind of talk about things that I enjoy talking about. And I also had to do an episode today because it marks the one-year anniversary of January 6th, 2021. And that is what I call the event, is just the events of January 6th, because just like everything else in our world today, the words that are used to describe that event have been very heavily politicized. Some people like to call it a riot. Some people like to call it a protest. And then there are people that are either on the left or find themselves very much disenfranchised with Donald Trump, that like to call it an insurrection. And that's the first thing I want to talk about. I think to call it an insurrection is a misnomer and a very dangerous term to use. And I think that the people that started calling it an insurrection know exactly what they are doing. So, first of all, an insurrection is an attempt to overthrow the government. That would be, any kind of military attempt or trying to overthrow the current leader and to instill a new one. And so, first of all, I don't think that January 6th was this, because, first of all, the people that got into the Capitol were able to do so, and then when they got in, they just had no idea what to do afterwards. If these were real insurrectionists, they would have had a plan of exactly how they were going to instill their new leader. Or in this case, even, keep the same leader in power against the rules of the country. In fact, what was going on in the minds of the people that were in the Capitol on January 6th, they felt that they were doing their duty to keep the integrity of the country, however misguided that may be. So what they thought they were doing was they were going in and ensuring that our institutions were being upheld properly and encouraging the lawmakers to do something that in their mind was constitutional, and that they were trying to get Mike Pence to not certify the results of the election. Now, we'll get to it later that that's absolutely not something that Mike Pence could have done. And I think that Mike Pence acted exceedingly bravely in the way that he handled the January 6th situation. But we'll get back to that later. But what I'm saying here is that it was not an insurrection because they just felt that they were doing things that were according to the Constitution, that they were asking for something that was in accordance with the Constitution. But the reason I think people on the left have chosen the word insurrection very carefully, as I see it, is for a very specific purpose. And that is Amendment 14 of the U.S. Constitution, ratified in 1868, right after the Civil War, paragraph 3, or section 3, which reads, "No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress, or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 in each house, remove such disability. So I think there are a few things here that in calling it an insurrection and in propagating it in the popular zeitgeist that it is an insurrection, it leaves Democrats with a couple of things in their back pocket. One, any congressman, any senator, they can say, oh, well, you're giving aid and comfort to an insurrection. You're out of Congress. Any Republican, they could come up with, especially people like the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world, who I think personally is a little bit of a nut job, but has every right to be in Congress. They could kick her out. Additionally, if Donald Trump were to run for office again in 2024 and win, they could try to pull this out on him and say, you're not able to be president of the United States because you were involved in a quote unquote insurrection. Now, I don't think that's going to be as big of a deal because the FBI has come out and said, look, this was not an insurrection. And I think as many people say it's an insurrection, I don't think the general public actually thinks that it was an honest-to-God insurrection that happened on January 6, 2021. All that being said, I want to make abundantly clear that, one, the people that were storming the Capitol on January 6th, I think, are open to prosecution. Two, that does not excuse a lot of the things that Donald Trump said and did that led up to the events of January 6th. So I want to talk about the election of 2020. One of the big lines that Donald Trump has been saying since he lost the election in November is that the real insurrection happened on November 3rd. That the system in its entirety was rigged against him, that he won a majority of the votes, and that it was taken away from him by wrongdoing. So I want to say here that I have done a lot of election law research for the American Conservative Union. That is my day job. And I want to say here that my views that I'm about to express are strictly my own and do not necessarily represent those of the American Conservative Union, where I am of employ. In the research that I have done, I am not convinced of what Donald Trump has been saying. And if you were to ask me right now, point blank, who is the legitimate winner of the 2020 presidential election, I would say it was Joe Biden. And I'm not going to get into the politics of why I think he was able to win, although I think if you look at America culturally at the time, it's not that much of a shock that he was able to beat Donald Trump just because of the political temperature at that point in time. But I do not think there was a widespread conspiracy, or if there was, it didn't work to overturn the election of 2020. The only two things that I've really been able to discover that were really suspicious and really erroneous about the 2020 election was, one, in Wisconsin, the Green Party candidate was not allowed on the ballot. And if in 2020, the voters of Wisconsin had voted the same way they had in 2016, then, and assuming that Most of the Green Party candidates who weren't able to vote for the Green Party candidate voted for Joe Biden and not for Donald Trump. If you assume all of that, then if the Green Party candidate had been on the ballot in 2020, then he would have received enough votes taken away for what became Joe Biden votes, would have taken away enough from Joe Biden that Donald Trump would have carried the state of Wisconsin. That's one. Two, Georgia. I don't think it was enough to flip the states of Georgia, but there were issues with the way that ballots were counting. And you can see where, like, the cover pages of these big blocks of ballots, where, like, they would have some mostly Joe Biden votes and some Donald Trump ones were thrown in there. And say if it was a stack of 200 ballots and 150 of them were for Joe Biden and 50 of them were for Donald Trump, it would say 200 for Joe Biden. And you can look. These are out there that you can see. These are actual Georgia ballots where this happened and there was a miscount. I don't think it was enough to flip the state, but these are out there. But let's assume that they were enough to flip the state. Let's assume that there was enough to flip the state in Georgia and Wisconsin. That still would not have been enough for Donald Trump to have been elected president if both of those states were flipped. And then you can look over at Arizona, which I think is pretty clear after the Cyber Ninjas audit, that Joe Biden won the state of Arizona. And I just think, as far as all these other claims that are out there, I think there's no merit to them. So I think that Donald Trump won, or I'm sorry, Joe Biden won the general election in 2020, and there's really not that much disputing that. But even if there was, and this is a point that I, if you get nothing else out of anything that I ever say in any of these podcasts ever, the one point I want to drive home is that the American people do not elect the president of the United States. It's not designed that way. We do not. It's not based on our vote. The Electoral College is the body that elects the president of the United States. The Electoral College over the years has tied itself to the popular votes of each state. But in that situation, the electors in the Electoral College, they place trust in the popular elections of their individual states. And if they don't believe the results of their popular election, they're free to vote however they want. And the electors of each state said, I believe the results of the popular election in my state, and I'm going to vote the way that my state wants me to. And that, I think, is part of the it's accidental beauty of the Electoral College in this respect, because there was never supposed to be popular votes amongst the states for electing the president. But what it does is it insulates the presidency in a way that you just wouldn't have with popular votes. Because in a situation where the people directly in a popular vote situation elected the president, then there would be a case to say that, yes, Mike Pence could have gone in and not certified the election results because we see all this, you know, junk going on, and then could have, you know, sued into oblivion when there was nothing there. But the Electoral College insulates it from that. It says, here is the point in time when we elect the president. It is at this moment in the Electoral College that it happens. And once the Electoral College vote takes place, the fat lady's son. There's nothing that can be done. So looking forward, I think there is a couple of things that we need to do. One, I think that 2020 showed us that the push for greater election integrity is a valid one. And I know what you're thinking. Well, Court, you just said that you didn't see enough, you know, bad stuff going on in 2020 to overturn the election and blah, blah, blah. But here's the important I think it's important that the American people perceive a fair and stable election. In 2016, about 45% of Americans thought that the election was unfair and that one of the parties had cheated. In 2020, about 45% of the American people said that they thought there was some cheating involved and some unfairness involved. And I bet you dollars to donuts that those 45% of the people were not the exact same people. I would bet that in 2016, a majority of that 45% thought that the election was rigged against Hillary Clinton. And likewise, I would bet that a majority of the 45% of people in 2020 thought that it was rigged against Donald Trump. So right there, we have roughly, you know, 90% of the population would be a guess of people who in the past, in less than a decade, think that one of the two elections was rigged. And that's a problem. It's important that the American people think that elections are secure, because that's the only way we're going to return to the peaceful transitions of power, is if people think that their vote matters, and that if they lose, they think, I lost because not enough people agreed with me. And then you can retool your platform and the people that you elect in primaries. But if you think off the bat that your election, that the election has been rigged, then eventually you're going to resort to violence, because you think that's the only way that you're going to get your candidate in office. So that's why I am 100% for voter IDs. I am 100% for having, you know, a day where this is the cutoff day and no more ballots can go in. I am ardently against voter drop boxes. I am very wary of voting by mail. Ballot harvesting, where you're able to go and collect ballots from people as a third party, seems like a terrible idea to me. So I think that election integrity would be an important step moving forward. And finally, I want to talk about Donald Trump in 2024. And I say this as somebody who voted for Donald Trump and campaigned for Donald Trump in both of his campaigns. I don't think that he should run in 2024. And I know he's never going to hear this little tiny podcast. But I guess to my friends who would maybe vote for Donald Trump and are listening to this, I don't think that he would be a good candidate in the general election in 2024. And there's a few reasons for this. One, I think January 6th showed a complete and utter either ignorance or complete disregard for the Constitution. It's pretty clear to me that the way the presidential election works is not the popular votes amongst the states directly electing the president. Rather, the Electoral College elects the president. And yet, even after the Electoral College vote, Trump kept making these claims of voter fraud and kept saying, you know, that there was going to be a way that he was going to have a second term, and kept saying these things, which I think riled up his base to a point that they were able to do something on January 6th, that they did what they did on January 6th. I misspoke. But he showed either he didn't know that that's how the Electoral College worked, or he didn't care. And either one of those, in my mind, disqualifies him from being president, in that I would not vote for him in a primary or a general election in 2024. Politically, I think it's a bad idea as well, because he has not expanded his base since January 6th. I couldn't imagine a person in 2024 who did not vote for him in 2020 voting for him in 2024. I think the way he has conducted himself has been only pandering to his base. And that base has shrunk, because I used to be people. There are people like me out there. I know I'm not the only one that was part of his base in, 2019, early 2020. Well, probably not early 2020, because he had, again, after the Electoral College vote, kept saying all these things. But people that were part of his base from the beginning up to 2019 who are now not in his base. And I would consider myself one of those. So I couldn't imagine his base has gotten any bigger, and instead would assume that it's gotten smaller. And the other thing is, too, this is just on a side note. I think you could put almost any person wearing a red tie to run against Joe Biden or the Democrat in 2024, because of just how horribly this country has been run since Joe Biden and the Democrats took office. And you're starting to see the nation's politics shift to the right because of how horribly they're doing. In Virginia, the state that I call home now, we just elected a Republican governor, Glenn Youngkin. And that would have been unheard of like a year ago or 3 years ago. That would have been unheard of. And he was able to do really, really well. And you see in some of the more liberal counties that Glenn Youngkin did a lot better than Donald Trump did. In Loudoun County in Northern Virginia, super wealthy, liberal, granola eating place. Glenn Youngkin did 10 points better than Donald Trump did. So I think you're starting to see this shift to the right. And then also in New Jersey, they almost elected a Republican governor. I mean, literally, if they had put like $2 million into that election, they would have been able to carry the state. And nobody saw that coming. So you're seeing this shift to the right that I think Donald Trump running in the general would absolutely sweep away. The other reason I think that Donald Trump shouldn't run in 2024 is because of a reason that somebody, one of my dear friends, I was having lunch with him the other day, was a dear college friend of mine. And he said that if we run Donald Trump in 2024, then the Make America Great Again movement is contained just in Donald Trump. He would own the entire movement. But if Donald Trump were to step aside and say, I give my support to this person, and then didn't, only campaign with him when needed to, preferably I would like a Glenn Youngkin situation where I didn't really campaign with him much at all, but the Trump people still really liked the person. If there's a situation like that that comes along, then the Make America Great Again torch is carried on. Then it is upheld, and you still have the base that's really excited still, but you're also able to grow it, and it's able to continue on into the future. And I thought that was an incredible analogy for what needs to happen. And it reminded me of the Reagan years, right? Because Ronald Reagan, obviously, in his second term, won very, very handily. And then George Bush was able to win his term based off of just the pure excitement for how great we had it under Ronald Reagan. Because that's how you keep a torch held and moving forward. And I think we could do the same with the Make America Great Again movement. I think the Make America Great Again movement still has great bones. But I think for it to become effective again, and for it to become, you know, a light again, and for it to not be saddled with the memory of January 6th, and with a lot of the chaos of the Trump presidency, then I think Donald Trump has to step aside. And, you know, me personally, I would love a Ron DeSantis to run or something like that. But, or Rand Paul. But, you know, I think there are a million different Republicans out there that could fill that role and would be able to carry on the Make America Great Again torch. But I think Mr. Trump has to step aside. And that is all I have for you today, listeners. Thank you again. As always, I am flattered that as many people listen to this podcast that do. I enjoy doing it. It allows me to kind of gather my own thoughts. And, you know, honestly, I was thinking about it today, and I feel good about the future of this country. I don't really see it getting much worse, because I think we're going to retake the House and we're going to take back the Senate. The other thing I think that recent American history has done is it's made people believe in their states more. You know, I was just in Florida, and the pride that people have in the state of Florida is like nothing else that I've ever seen. And one of the beauties of federalism is that people are able to take pride in their state governments, and they're able to have a lot more of a say in what goes on in their state governments than what goes on in national governments. And each state can be a laboratory of democracy where people can, you know, they can push the policies that they think work for them. You know, in Florida, they've chose freedom above almost anything else in a strong economy. In other states, they've chosen other values that they hold near and dear. And I think that's a beautiful part of America. And, you know, for years and years, it's just been the centralization of power to the central government and to Washington, D.C. And I think that this pandemic will mark a shift in the history books and in the legal book, the legal textbooks. It's going to mark a shift in the American attitude back to the states. And that power will be taken away from the federal government, either voted away or by states seizing it. And not seeing, you know, not continuing that growth of the federal government. And to me, that's about the most exciting thing that could happen. Anyway, that was a tangent that I did not plan on going on, but I enjoyed talking about. So, again, listeners, thank you. I love you all. God bless America. And, yeah, thank you.